Once again, you're listening to the Hour of the Time, the only real, honest, last bastion of truth left in broadcasting. Ladies and gentlemen, Veritas is out. Some of you should have received it in your mailbox today. Some of you may have received it yesterday. I don't know. But the rest of you will be receiving it trickling into your mailboxes over the next couple of weeks. Remember, it's sent by bulk rate, which means it could take up to 3 or 4 weeks to get there, but usually it doesn't. Usually it's there, some people, 2 or 3 days after we drop it in the mail. Some people as long as 2 weeks later, and then everywhere in between. But bear in mind, it could be 3 to 4 weeks. It has not been that long so far for anybody. Now, if you'd like to subscribe to Veritas, I have to tell you right now, we sat down today and we figured up all the money that we've taken in since Veritas began, all of our expenses and outlays, and of course, there's a huge, tremendous expense for all of the newspapers that we send to everybody in Washington, D.C., and we came up way short, ladies and gentlemen, and these young men who came from California to make this paper work for us aren't getting paid. So we have to raise the rates for the paper. Now, if you've already got a subscription, don't worry about it. You're okay. We're not going to go back to you and tell you that you've got to pay any more money. But if you haven't subscribed yet and you don't get it in real quick, because on the day that the fourth issue goes to press, the new rates apply, and they will be published in that paper. We don't know exactly what they are now, but I guarantee you they're going to go up for all classes of subscriptions. The price for single back issues will remain the same, $5 for first class postage. So if you have not subscribed to Veritas yet, you had better do it right now. Let me say this again. On the day that the fourth issue goes to press, the new prices take effect, and we will not accept subscriptions at the old rate. So if you'd like to subscribe to Veritas now at the current rate, you had better get your subscriptions in. It's 6 issues for $15, 12 issues for $30, 18 issues for $40, and 24 issues for $50. So we're going to give you one last chance to get your subscriptions at these rates simply because we just don't want to lower the boom on everybody. But the day that the fourth issue goes to press, which is not going to be very far off in the future, the new rates will apply. I don't know what they are yet, but they will be higher. And there's nothing that we can do about it, folks. I cannot bring myself to stop sending the newspaper to everybody in Washington, D.C. That was one of the considerations that came up. I vetoed it. If you've been getting a complimentary copy of Veritas, you will no longer get a complimentary copy. In fact, what you're going to get is a letter saying that you've received your last copy if you were on the comp list. And if you want to continue to receive Veritas, you're going to have to subscribe like everybody else because we just can't carry it. And what I'm talking about, folks, is there are some people who we believed had contributed a substantial amount to our cause. People whom we care about, people who have been working toward the protection of liberty for a long time, people whom we felt was important to get an issue of the paper. And
I don't know how many people were getting comp issues. I don't think that there was a whole lot, but they're not going to get them anymore. So be advised and act accordingly. And also, if you are a CAGI member, the next issue is your last issue. Is your last issue. Now, I'm not talking about intelligence service members. You will get a full 24. But if you are a CAGI member, or were a CAGI member, and have been getting issues of Veritas, number 4 will be your last issue. So if you want to make sure that your subscription continues, you're going to have to send your subscription in now also. Because once number 4 is out, we start working on number 5. Once number 5 goes to press, it's gone. You won't get it if you haven't got your subscription in. So let me give you the prices one more time at the current rate. And remember, when the next issue goes to press, these rates no longer apply. The new rates will apply. They'll be published in the magazine, and I will give them out over the air. But the current rate is 6 issues for $15, 12 issues, $30, 18 issues, $40, 24 issues, $50. Make checks or money orders out to Veritas, spelled V as in Victor, E-R-I-T-A-S. Send them to Veritas at Post Office Box 3390. That's P.O. Box 3390, St. John's, Arizona, 85936. That's P.O. Box 3390, St. John's, Arizona, 85936. Also, folks, we're getting ready to close out the conference. If you have not sent your conference fees in and you plan on attending, you had better do it right now. It's $100 for single intelligence service and all CAGI members per person. If you have a single membership or if you are a CAGI member per person. If you are in the intelligence service and you have a family membership, it's $150 for 2 people, $200 for 3 people or more. Okay? And that covers all of you. If you are not a member, it's $350, non-negotiable, $350. All conference fees are non-refundable. If you all of a sudden find you can't come, don't call and ask for a refund. You will not get it. They are non-refundable. And there's a reason for it, but we don't need to explain it to you. Either you want to come or you don't. If you want to come, get your fees in and make sure you're here. If you find out you can't be here, then sell your seat to somebody else, either a member or collect the balance for a non-member or whatever. But you take care of your own business. Don't go away. I'll be right back. And folks, in this issue of Veritas, you got a surprise. Most of you have never read the Declaration of Independence, and most of you don't have a copy of the Constitution. Probably the only time you ever read it was in high school, and somebody made you read it, if you ever read it at all, and so you don't remember what it says. Both of those documents in the Bill of Rights are in issue number 3 of Veritas, just so you can see what it's all about. And tonight I'm going to be talking about what these documents really mean, what they're about. So don't go away. This is an important broadcast.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The Pledge of Allegiance to the flag is a pledge to the ideals of our forefathers, the men who fought and died in the building of this great nation. It's a pledge to fulfill our duties and obligations as citizens of the United States, and to uphold the principles of our Constitution. And last but not least, it's a pledge to maintain the four great freedoms cherished by all Americans. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. I pledge allegiance.
Ladies and gentlemen, until our founding fathers penned the document that we know as the Declaration of Independence, and then put together the Articles of Confederation, and then through a little spate of trickery, which someone is trying today again, called the Conference of States, they created the Constitution for the United States of America, and then the Bill of Rights. Previous to this, no people who've lived upon the face of this earth have ever truly been free. Ever. They've always been the subject, or the slave, or the indentured servant, or the property of some sultan, king, emir, emperor. Whether benevolent or despotic made no difference. Our forefathers, for the first time in the history of the entire world, sat down and created a new nation under God. It was a unique idea that had never before been presented anywhere, not in thought, not in philosophy, not in reality. The unique idea of the American Constitution, ladies and gentlemen, was based upon the concept of a linear line of power from the Creator to the created. And it went something like this. You see, the power of the idea was in the recognition that people's rights are granted directly by the Creator. God created man. He created man in his own image. That's the way the story goes, whether you believe it or not. Our founding fathers believed it. And it's the principle upon which this nation was founded. Since the Creator created man, power passed from the Creator to man. Since man created government, the power rests in the people, and the people limited the power of government and gave the government certain rights and restricted government with a document called the Constitution. So the power of the idea was in the recognition that people's rights are granted directly by the Creator, not by the state. The state did not exist until the people created it. And that the people then, and only then, grant rights to government. This concept, ladies and gentlemen, is so simple, yet so very fundamental and far-reaching. First, the Creator created man. Man was endowed with certain unalienable rights. Not inalienable rights, as you so often like to parrot because you hear it on the news or somewhere else. And for the precedent, check the Declaration of Independence. You will find the proper usage. The Creator endowed man with certain unalienable rights. Man banded together for his mutual protection and benefits and created a government. Man gave this government some rights and severely restricted the power of the government, keeping the power to the people and in what they called the states. America's founders, folks, embraced a previously unheard of political philosophy, which held that people are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. You're going to hear this over and over and over again. You can never hear it enough. This was the statement of guiding principle for our new nation. And as such, it had to be translated into a concrete charter for government. The Constitution for the United States of America became that charter. It was necessary because our founding fathers understood the nature of government was to gather into itself more and more power, consolidate that power, and subject people to the position of slavery. They had left the old world to escape religious and governmental persecution. Our founders were men who understood the very basic nature of man. They so understood the very basic nature of man that they built in to this document called the Constitution protections against man himself. They also built into the Constitution provisions whereby man could enslave himself if he so desired. This is called the power to contract, or the right to contract. Now, other forms of government, past and present, rely on the states as the grantor of human rights. Our forefathers understood that the power must reside with the people, and that the states must be restricted by some kind of a contract. They called this contract a constitution, constitution for the states, and constitution for the central or federal government. However, they realized and recognized that man was a creature of free will, and that God's purpose was for man to exercise that free will, and so therefore they could not restrict man's right to contract, knowing full well that this could be the method whereby man would again enslave himself. Many people don't understand that concept. Nevertheless, that's the way it was in the beginning of this country. America's founders believed that a government made up of imperfect people exercising power over other imperfect people should possess only very limited powers. Through their constitution, they wished to secure the blessings of liberty for themselves and for posterity by limiting the powers of government. Now, by the very nature of the wording, by the very meaning of their expression for the future, they gave us their solid intent that the Constitution was not created just for them or for their decade or for their children. They particularly used the word posterity, which means an unbroken chain of people from the founders into infinity. Now, through this Constitution, ladies and gentlemen, they delegated to government only those rights that they wanted it to have, holding to themselves, the people, all powers not delegated by the Constitution. They even provided the means for controlling those powers they had granted to government. And that's why, if the federal government will not abide by the Constitution for the United States of America, and in particular the 10th Amendment, all these 10th Amendment resolutions don't mean anything. And you'd better think on that for a while. So, this was the unique American idea. Many problems that we face today result directly, ladies and gentlemen, from a departure from this basic concept. Other ideas have gradually crept in and influenced legislation, which has reversed the roles and given government greater and greater power over individuals. Early generations of Americans pledged their lives to the cause of individual freedom and limited government, and they warned us over and over again that eternal vigilance would be required to preserve that freedom for posterity. Our founders, ladies and gentlemen, knew that it takes more than a perfect plan of government to preserve liberty. Something else is needed. Some moral principle diffused among the people to unite and strengthen the urge to peaceful observance of law. You see, they recognize that the raw materials of a free government are people who can act morally without compulsion, who do not willfully violate the rights of others, and who love liberty enough to demand that government's power is very limited. They used the word virtuous to describe such people. Now, defined by Webster, virtue is a, and I quote, conformity to a standard of right, end quote. But whatever word is used to describe it, such a moral standard is the necessary fountainhead of a free society. Now, virtue is not something that government can legislate. It is not something that can be created or enforced in the law. And you have to feel this in your soul, in your heart. You have to understand what this means. Without people who can act morally, without compulsion, without laws to force them to act morally, without people who do not willfully violate the rights of others, and without people who love liberty, without people who are virtuous, man cannot live in freedom. And you see efforts being made now to create the illusion that man cannot live in freedom because man cannot act responsible. Man is not virtuous. And that is a lie. These are deceptions and manipulations that are created to force us back into the state of slavery so that a brotherhood of elite can once again rule, as they always have throughout the history of the world. John Jay said, and I quote, "Let virtue, honor, the love of liberty be the soul of this Constitution, and it will become the source of great and extensive happiness to this and future generations. Vice, ignorance, and want of vigilance will be the only enemies able to destroy it," end quote. And he is absolutely right. The Declaration of Independence referred to nature's God, the Creator, the Supreme Judge of the world, and Divine Providence. All of these were used within that document to describe what many refer to as God. Our nation's founders, ladies and gentlemen, came together voluntarily with a bit of trickery to create a limited government to secure for them and their posterity their God-given rights to life, liberty, and property. Such liberty, they believed, rested on three great supports. Number one, natural law and unalienable natural rights granted by God. Number two, a written constitution to assure a government of laws, not of rulers. And three, virtue among the people, the best defense against tyranny. Their own words are eloquent reminders of their devotion to this belief. George Washington, in his farewell address, said this, quote, Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. It is substantially true that virtue or morality is a necessary spring of popular government, end quote. Samuel Adams said, and I quote, "We may look up to armies for our defense, but virtue is our best security. It is not possible that any state should long remain free where virtue is not supremely honored," end quote. And John Adams, quote, "Virtue must underlay all institutional arrangements if they are to be healthy and strong. The principles of democracy are as easily destroyed as human nature is corrupted," end quote. And Alexis de Tocqueville, the French statesman, who came to America and traveled across the land in the 1830s and wrote a two-volume study entitled Democracy in America, has been widely quoted as observing, "America is great because she is good. And if America ever ceases to be good, America will cease to be great." Now, there's a great misconception that the government was created as a Christian government. This is not true, ladies and gentlemen. Our forefathers were escaping from religious persecution in the old world. They created, very clearly, without any misunderstanding whatsoever, a secular government which protected the rights of all people to worship at the altar of their choice. They particularly created in the Constitution a clause whereby the state could not recognize any one religion and therefore create another era of persecution if someone did not belong to that religion. What created the Christian nature that many have seen in our government was the virtue of the Christian people who occupied elected, appointed, and hired positions within that government. If they had been Buddhists, and if the Constitution was exactly the same as our forefathers wrote it, our government would have reflected the philosophy of Buddhism throughout the last 200 and some odd years. Now, this is unmistakable. You may vilify me if you wish, because I'm telling you the truth. That's up to you. The government reflects the nature of the people who occupy the positions in the government. It reflects their philosophy and their moral beliefs. And that is where the benevolence or the despotism that lies within government comes from. Compare the government of our founding fathers and the government of today, and you will understand exactly what I mean. If this were a Christian government, the things that are happening today could not happen. You see, it is a secular government which reflects the philosophy and religious beliefs and the moral standing of those who occupy the positions of authority within it. The government exists on a piece of paper, ladies and gentlemen. It could no more be Christian than it could be Buddhist, than it could be an atheist. These things stem from the hearts and the minds of men. Hate to always be popping bubbles, but someone, it seems, has to. We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Our Declaration of Independence, dear listeners, acknowledges a Creator as the source of the unalienable rights that governments are formed to secure. This acknowledgement was the very foundation of the Constitution for the United States of America. You see, the government was created to protect the rights of man, not to reflect anything of it. Now, I know people today who have lived in this nation all of their life, who are 60 years old, who cannot tell me what these unalienable rights are with which we have been endowed. They may be described in many ways, but an English jurist named Sir William Blackstone wrote in 1766, and I quote, "These may be reduced to three principal articles. One, the right of personal security or life. Two, the right of personal liberty. And three, the right of private property." End quote. Our written Constitution was to protect and secure God-given individual rights to life, liberty, and property. If we ever, ladies and gentlemen, allow this foundation to be eroded and lose faith that these rights are a gift directly from God to each individual, then we lose the basis of the greatness of the miracle of America. And I tell you, that is exactly what is happening today. Godless people inhabited the core of our government. Watch what they do. And that will tell you the true nature of their belief. You see, people who believe in God, whether they be Buddhist, whether they be Taoist, whether they be Christian, whether they be Catholic, whether they be Mormon, could no more perform the deeds that we witnessed in Waco, Texas, than the man in the moon could come down and share a glass of wine with us tomorrow evening. Now, the ultimate source, ladies and gentlemen, of constitutional law is called the natural law. The natural law are the laws created by God that run the universe, that run the earth, that run nature. Sir William Blackstone said this, quote, "Man must necessarily be subject to the laws of his Creator. This will of his Maker is called the law of nature. And this law of nature is, of course, superior to any other. No human laws are of any validity if contrary to this, and such of them as are valid derive all their force from this original," end quote. The founders did not, ladies and gentlemen, they did not establish the Constitution for the purpose of granting rights. There are no constitutional rights. Rather, they established this government of laws, not a government of men, in order to secure each person's creator-endowed rights to life, liberty, and property. One of the greatest problems we see today is that those in government do not recognize the creator-endowed rights protected by the Constitution. They are attempting, ladies and gentlemen, to create a government of men not a government of laws. A government of laws must conform to the natural law, and they must build upon it. From that basis of perfect working that we see throughout the entire universe. Man gets in trouble when he tries to go against the natural law. You've all seen the commercial, "Don't fool with Mother Nature." Well, it's true. Only in America did a nation's founders recognize that rights, though endowed by the Creator as unalienable, unalienable
prerogatives would not be sustained in society unless they were protected under a code of law, which was itself in harmony with a higher law. They called it natural law, or nature's law. Such law is the ultimate source and established limit for all of man's laws, and is intended to protect each of these natural rights for all of mankind. The Declaration of Independence of 1776 established the premise that in America, a people might assume the station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, when we say that Pledge of Allegiance, we're not pledging allegiance to the flag. We're not pledging allegiance to Bill Clinton or Janet Reno or to the Congress or Newt Gingrich, although many might argue that point. The truth is, we are pledging allegiance to principles and ideals which all of us understand, who understand how and why this nation was created. And we feel this inside of us somewhere. There's a place where this resides. There's a place where all of us, no matter who we are, no matter what our station is, no matter how old we are, if we are truly American, we feel this. We feel it when the flag passes by. The flag is a symbol. It is not a thing. We feel it when we give the Pledge of Allegiance. We feel it when we sing the national anthem. We feel it when we see the Vietnam Memorial. We feel it when we see the birthplace of the Constitution in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This feeling stems, ladies and gentlemen, not from a section of land surrounded by borders, not from the word America, although that word sometimes helps to evoke that feeling, but from the principles and ideals that give us the life that enables us to truly experience liberty, the only people in the world, even today, even as bad as things are, the rest of the world is wearing two chains. We have just begun to put on one. If we're not careful, we'll be wearing four. So these are the things that I think that it's important for you to understand, and I'm going to expound upon that, and we may discuss it again tomorrow night. But don't go away.
Oh, God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above, from the mountain.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Hour of the Time is brought to you by Swiss America Trading, and if you've never talked to them, you should call them just to thank them for sponsoring this broadcast. If you've been listening for a while, or if you've been reading the newspapers, you know that this is a very controversial broadcast. Patriotism is a no-no. They're trying to destroy the sovereignty of this nation. They want to destroy any loyalty to the principles and ideals upon which this nation was founded, so that they can have their utopian dream that's existed in the Brotherhood for thousands of years, of a one-world government where there is no threat of war, where there's no threat to the rulers by the populace, where everything is just hunky-dory, peachy-keen. And if you believe that that's possible, knowing the evil that lurks within the heart of all men, including you that's listening, and yes, I'm talking directly to you, and if you tell me you've never had any of those thoughts in your life, then you're just plain flat a barefaced liar. I have found in my life, ladies and gentlemen, that all evil stems from the hearts and minds of men and nowhere else. It does not exist in nature. It exists in all of us. The weakest of us give way to it and commit unspeakable acts. All of us, at one time or another, give in to temptation and do things that we wish we had not done. Luckily, most of us don't do anything too harmful. And those of us who get this far in life got away with one or two. But it's a constant battle. The best of us learn to deal with it and overcome these temptations and urges, but they never go away. They never go away. So the only way that these people can have their utopian socialist world government, where everything is just hunky-dory, they say it's going to be a real hoot. The only way that they can do that is to control every single individual for every moment of every hour, of every day, of every week, of every month, of every year of their life. And I mean complete control. You see, without that complete control, they can never ensure that human beings, being made up of the imperfect nature that they are, would never do anything to threaten them. So the only way that they can have what they want is by relegating man back from his ultimate achievement of personal liberty and responsibility and consequences for that responsibility. And one of the reasons why we have so much crime and so many problems now is they've taken away the consequences of irresponsible actions. It's gotten to the point, it'd be very hard to reinstall that responsibility. I want you to call Swiss America Trading. Thank them for sponsoring this broadcast. Thank them for allowing you a conduit to your past, a way to reach out and touch your roots, a way to find the truth in this world of deception. You see, we try to follow the path here. We want to go through the gate, not run into the fence. 1-800-289-2646. Talk to them about how you can get your hands on some real money that will help protect all that you've worked and slaved for up to this point, because times are going to get hard. You want to know how hard? Take a look at Mexico. That'll give you some idea. 1-800-289-2646.
Oh, beautiful, for spacious skies,
the Declaration of Independence established the premise that we might assume the station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitled us. Some people don't want you to believe in God or believe that you're entitled to anything or that you were endowed with any natural rights at all. They want to give those to the state and make the individual second rate. And if you want to know what that means, study the history of socialism. And with that concept lay the security for our individual rights. You see, they put forth an immutable code of law, sanctioned by the creator of man's rights and designed to promote, preserve, and protect him and his fellows in the enjoyment of their rights. They believed that such natural law, revealed to man through his reason, was capable of being understood by both the plowman and the professor. Sir William Blackstone, whose writings trained Americans' lawyers for its first century, capsulized such reasoning with this statement. For as God, when he created matter and endued it with a principle of mobility, established certain rules for the direction of that motion. So when he created man and endued him with free will to conduct himself in all parts of life, he laid down certain immutable laws of human nature, whereby that free will is in some degree regulated and restrained, and gave him also the faculty of reason to discover the purport of those laws. End quote. And what are, ladies and gentlemen, those natural laws? Well, he continued, quote, such among others are these principles, that we should live honestly, should hurt nobody, and should render to everyone his due, end quote. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the most concise, encapsulated rendition of the platform of the Constitution Party that I've ever heard. The founders saw these as moral duties between individuals. Thomas Jefferson wrote this, man has been subjected by his Creator to the moral law, of which his feelings or conscience, as it is sometimes called, are the evidence with which his Creator has furnished him the moral duties which exist between individual and individual in a state of nature, accompany them into a state of society. Their Maker not having released them from those duties on their forming themselves into a nation. End quote. America's leaders, ladies and gentlemen, of 1787 had studied Cicero, Polybius, Coke, Locke, Montesquieu, and Blackstone, amongst others, as well as the history of the rise and fall of governments throughout history, and they recognized these underlying principles of law as those of the Decalogue. For those of you who don't know what the Decalogue is, it's the Golden Rule and the deepest thought of the ages. Very simply, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. An example of the harmony of natural law and natural rights is Blackstone's, quote, that we should live honestly, end quote. When you read Michelle's editorial in this issue of Veritas, you'll understand just how far we've fallen just in our short lifetimes, as she describes a neighborhood where she could play outside, where her mother didn't have to watch her. Everyone knew everyone else. There were neighborhood barbecues. The biggest injury that a child ever suffered was when they got hit in the head with a dust ball or a stick, maybe. and no one was afraid to walk down a strange street. It was an adventure, not a terrible risk of your life. That we should live honestly, otherwise known as thou shalt not steal, whose corresponding natural right is that of individual freedom to acquire and own through honest initiative private property. You see, folks, in our founding fathers' view, this law and this right were inalterable and of a higher order than any written law of man. Thus, the Constitution confirmed the law and secured the right and bound both individuals and their representatives in government to a moral code which did not permit either to take the earnings of another without his consent. Under this code, individuals could not band together and do through government's coercive power that which Comrade Clinton and all of the other comrades in Washington, D.C., have done today, and which was not lawful between individuals to do at any time in history or today. America's Constitution is the culmination of the very best reasoning of men of all time. Nothing has ever surpassed it or even come close to equaling it, and it is based on the most profound and beneficial values mankind has ever been able to fathom. It is, ladies and gentlemen, as William E. Gladstone observed, the most wonderful work ever struck off at a given time by the brain and purpose of man. And we should dedicate ourselves to rediscovering and preserving an understanding of our Constitution's basis and natural law for the protection of natural rights. Principles and ideals which have provided American citizens with more protection for individual rights while guaranteeing more freedom than any people who have ever lived upon the face of this earth even today. John Locke said, "The end of law is not to abolish or restrain, but to preserve and enlarge freedom." President Clinton, over this last week, said, "How dare you say that you live in tyranny when you live in the freest nation in the world?" Something has escaped Comrade Clinton, for this is no longer what it once was. And other nations that once lived in a modicum of liberty, nothing close to what we ever had, are now bound in chains. If you don't believe me, take a trip to Great Britain. Stop listening to what Margaret Thatcher is stumping around the country telling you about freedom and liberty and our kindred peoples, and go to England and talk to the people who live there under socialism. You will see that they are not free, and it is not true, and they cannot say what they wish to say, nor do what they wish to do, nor can they keep even a modicum of the money that they earn. They suffer under oppressive, terrible taxation. Our forefathers complained about a little tea tax, and we spend 6 months out of a year, those of us who are taxpayers, just paying the taxes that are levied against us in this country. And they are not all of them legal taxes. A great percentage of it is tribute paid to our conquerors. And in the nation where we used to have the most freedom, the best educational system, the most opportunity, we keep getting poorer and poorer and poorer. Every year, more and more property is seized, confiscated, without anyone being charged with any crime, without being brought to trial or found guilty of any crime or anything whatsoever. Lives are being ruined and destroyed. Doors are broken down every day without search warrants or with improper search warrants. Lives are destroyed. People are shot who have never done anything in their life. What kind of a nation is it when a woman holding an 8-month-old child to her breast is shot dead by a cowardly sniper named Lon Horiuchi lurking only 100 feet away in the bushes? And I could go on and on and on. What kind of a country is it where if you walk down the street with $500 in your pocket and a police officer decides he doesn't like your looks and rousts you up against the wall and finds that $500, you have just become a drug dealer. The $500 goes in his pocket, and he might turn it in at the police station, where it will become the property of the police to do with what they will under the seizure laws of present-day America. And if this counterterrorism bill is passed, the President of the United States, Comrade Clinton, is going to be able to name any organization in this country or in the world as a terrorist organization, including the Republican Party, if he so desires. How dare we? Stick around, and you'll find out. Good night, ladies and gentlemen, and God bless you all.
Tomorrow all the things were gone, worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, but the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that.